Hello and welcome to the Pantograph. This is Sharon and today is Wednesday, November 12th, 2025. We will begin our reading on the front page. Veterans Day, Day to Remember. The Bloomington Normal Honor Guard members performed a traditional three-volley salute as taps was sounded on Tuesday, November 11th, during a Veterans Day ceremony at Veterans of Foreign Wars Post 454 at 1006 East Lincoln Street in Bloomington. The ceremony started with a rifle shot each minute for 11 minutes before 11 a.m. A three-volley rifle salute, taps, and the bagpiper rendition of Amazing Grace followed. This time commemorated the cessation of hostilities at 11 a.m. on November 11, 1918 in World War I. The U.S. commemorated Armistice Day until 1954, when it was renamed as Veterans Day and expanded to honor all who served in the military. $2.6 million okayed for better water. Bids accepted for filtration facility. Improvements to Bloomington's water treatment plant that will support powdered activated carbon or PAC treatment to improve the taste of drinking water have been approved by the City Council. In March, the City Council approved the purchase of a PAC system for $755,000 to aid in the filtration of water from Lake Bloomington and Evergreen Lake. The decision was made following numerous complaints about the taste and odor of Bloomington's drinking water after switching from one reservoir to the other. In action on Monday, the council approved bids totaling about $2.6 million to build the facility. Methyl isoborneol, a naturally occurring compound in drinking water, typically must exceed 10 nanograms per liter to deal with taste and odor issues. On November 3rd, tests for methyl isoborneol were at 9.3 nanograms per liter in Lake Bloomington and 43 nanograms per liter in Evergreen Lake and 3.1 nanograms per liter within the treatment plant. None of these levels are seen as a public health risk. PAC is fed into the raw water at the treatment plant and absorbs contaminants. The mixture then gets removed from the water by a clarifier and water softeners and is then discharged. Bloomington City Manager Jeff Juergens said filters and the water treatment plant were recently replaced, which is not as easy as replacing the filter on your air conditioner. It's a big deal and it's expensive, but that's hopefully going to fix some of these numbers as well, Juergens said. P.J. Hoer came in as the lowest of two bidders in October to install the necessary infrastructure to operate this PAC equipment. The roughly $2.3 million in infrastructure work includes foundation, electrical, water, storage, and site upgrades. The project will be funded primarily through settlement money from a class action federal lawsuit over groundwater contamination from aqueous film-forming foam used in firefighting and to contain forever chemicals linked to a variety of health problems. The new system is meant to be enclosed in a silo that is divided into an upper compartment for PAC storage and a lower compartment where the PAC would be mixed into a slurry that could be fed into the raw water. The city recommended moving forward with the Donahue and Associates Incorporated for construction-related services for the silo and storage facilities in the amount of about $283,000. The council voted on the purchases and appropriations as one package, which was approved without opposition. Alderman Cody Hendricks was absent. In response to an inquiry from Alderman Michael Mosley, Brett Lucian, Assistant Superintendent of the Water Department, said the city is looking in the long term at alternative water sources. We are going to be looking at getting some consultants on board to kind of help us look at that next future state of trying to provide good, adequate water for our citizens, Lucian said. In other business, a $112,572 contract with Spheros Environmental Group Parent Incorporated for algicide treatment in Lake Bloomington was withdrawn from Monday's consent agenda. The Bloomington Water Department had determined that another round of algicide treatment was necessary to treat algae growth, which can lead to taste and odor issues in the water. However, Jergen said staff is exploring other options related to treatment and believes it's premature to move forward with the contract. The city intends to bring this item or a related contract to the council at a future date. Arts and entertainment. Carl brings Only Human to Castle. Singer-songwriter Hayes Carl is bringing his We're Only Human tour to Bloomington on Friday. Carl is promoting his 10th studio album, which has the same name. Carl described the record as taking stock of life and finding out what works for him and how to navigate the human experience, he told the Pantograph. He has been performing professionally for 25 years. He was born in Houston, Texas, and lived in Arkansas and New York, but has been in Nashville for the last 7 years. He said his musical inspirations are Mount Rushmore, Bob Dylan, Willie Nelson, John Prine, and Kris Kristofferson. Getting to play with a lot of my heroes, John Prine, Lyle Lovett, Levon Helm, those were highlights for sure. That's what I look back on, is just getting to make music with the people that I idolized growing up, he said of what he's enjoyed over his decades-long career. For the upcoming show at the Castle Theater, 209 East Washington Street in Bloomington, Carl said they likely will play a bulk of the album. His favorite is the title track, which talks about how everyone struggles and is trying to find peace. He said the song and a lot of the record are about having grace for oneself and others in life. Carl recalls playing the Bloomington venue about 4 or 5 times before. He has also been with several variations of the same band over the years, but the current one is the one for which he is most excited. Taking our music as far as I can, it's just what I do, and Bloomington has always just been a good stop on the journey, he said. I'm excited about my band at the moment, the Gulf Coast Orchestra. It's the best band I've ever had. I'm just really looking forward to being on the road and playing with these musicians, he added. Just looking forward to getting together with folks and having a great evening. It will be great to be back in town. Along with Central Illinois, Carl also will make stops in Columbus, Ohio, Des Moines, Iowa, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, Indianapolis, Indiana, and then Chicago on November 21st. His band already finished one leg of the tour earlier this year, but the current leg began on November 1st. He said they will complete their next leg in December in Texas, and then another one on the West Coast in February. Carl already has a couple other projects in the works, but said it's a bit too early to share more at this time. He is always writing, though. They're two very different things, writing and performing, but the writing part is just being able to engage in creativity and tell stories and work through issues and just escape. It's really both exciting and rewarding to me to be able to go share that with people and feel like it has some effect on them. I just love to perform for an audience and feel like they're getting something out of it. It feels like a win for everybody, he said. Joining Carl on Friday, November 14th, will be opener Aaron Ratier. The show begins at 8 p.m. with doors opening at 7 p.m. Guests under 18 must be accompanied by an adult. Tickets are $25 in advance or $28 on the day of the show. Tickets can be purchased at thecastletheater.com or in person at the box office. And again, if you'd like to go, this is the Hayes Carl We're Only Human Tour. 8 o'clock on Friday, November 14th at the Castle Theater, 209 East Washington Street in Bloomington. Tickets are $25 to $28, and the website is thecastletheater.com. Today's Flick Fact question: which are there more of in America, McDonald's, Starbucks, or Subways, or State Farm Insurance Agency offices? And the answer, according to Forbes.com, it's a battle between Subway and State Farm. As of October 19th, there were 19,502 Subway restaurants and 19,201 State Farm Insurance Agency offices in America. Starbucks, there are only 17,380 of them, and McDonald's, there are only 13,711 of those. From the back pages of the Pantograph, How Time Flies Locally. 100 years ago, on November 12, 1925, Jack Spicer, popular manager of the Majestic Theater, was apprised yesterday of his appointment to the management of a new theater now nearing completion in the southwestern section of Chicago. This theater, erected by the well-known theatrical magnates of the metropolis, who control a chain of theaters throughout Illinois, is said to be one of the finest in Chicago. It will cater to vaudeville and moving pictures, and in its size, elaborate furnishings, and other characteristics will compare favorably with the best in the city by the lake. 75 years ago, on November 12, 1950, all 350 of Bloomington's school teachers and 36 Bloomington firms will participate in the city's first Business Industry Education Day on Monday, November 13th. Public and parochial schools will be dismissed for the day. The teachers will be broken into groups of 5 to 10 who all want to spend the day at a particular firm. The teachers will not skim the surface on a conducted tour. Executives of the firm will go into detail in explaining how the business operates, what its problems are, and how they are solved. 50 years ago, November 12, 1975, about 33,000 pounds of clothing destined for the refugees of natural disasters and wars throughout the world has left Bloomington for New Windsor, Maryland. The clothing, which was collected in an interdenominational drive in Illinois this year, will be distributed by Church World Service, a branch of the National Council of Churches. And 25 years ago today, November 12, 2000, the University High School Pioneers celebrated November 11th after winning the Class A State Volleyball Championship game over Wheaton St. Francis at Illinois State University's Redbird Arena. Threat to school chief alleged. A man from Arrowsmith has been released from McLean County custody after being accused of threatening to shoot people and harm the Ridgeview school superintendent. Jacqueline J. Alvarozos, 56, is charged with two Class 4 offenses of disorderly conduct. He appeared in custody on Monday before Judge Scott Black, a detention hearing. Assistant State's Attorney Titus Spitzbergen argued the defendant posed a danger that could not be mitigated by conditions of release. According to the probable cause statement, the charges followed a call from the superintendent about 10:41 a.m. on November 7th to the Colfax police. The school superintendent told police the defendant had said a few times that he was going to get out an unregistered gun and start shooting people, Spitzbergen said. The custodian said Alvarozos did not specify whom he would shoot, but that it would be a bunch of people. Additionally, the custodian said the defendant disclosed he would go into the superintendent's house and take care of him. The prosecutor noted the custodian said the defendant's threats were concerning because Alvarozos seemed crazy enough to do it. Spitzbergen said the defendant also had written a letter to Ridgeview's head of maintenance on November 6th, stating he was being harassed and manipulated by the custodian who put Alvarozos in a rage. Within the letter, the defendant said he would fight the custodian tooth and nail over the situation. Police searched the defendant's home but did not recover a weapon, Spitzbergen said. In arguing for his release, Assistant Public Defender Stuart Wallace said the defendant does not have a prior criminal history and denies making threats toward the superintendent. Wallace also said the state's evidence is fairly weak and relies almost entirely on the double hearsay statements of a disgruntled co-worker. Wallace said the defendant had previously been employed by the Colfax-based school district, and his letter was in regards to fighting his union over adverse employment action. The defense attorney said Alvarozos has family members who attend the school, so he would not harm anyone at the school. Instead of detention, Wallace suggested no contact orders with the individuals named in this offense, home confinement, and an order for the defendant not to have a gun. Spitzbergen argued no conditions could reduce the risk, saying he believes Alvarozos could potentially act on this threat before police would be able to be notified that he had left his home. Man accused of stealing $1,000 in merchandise. A man from Detroit has been released from custody after he was accused of burglarizing Dick's Sporting Goods, fleeing from police, and causing a multiple car crash. Taryn D. Garrett, 20, appeared before Judge Scott Black on Monday afternoon for his initial appearance. He is being charged with burglary, a Class 2 felony, retail theft, a Class 3 felony, two counts of aggravated fleeing or attempting to elude a police officer, Class 4 felonies. Assistant State's Attorney Titus Spitzbergen filed a petition to detain the defendant, arguing his conduct resulting in the Class 4 felonies posed a risk to the community's safety. Spitsbergen said these charges stemmed from a November 7th incident in which the Bloomington police were dispatched to the 1600 block of East Empire Street for a report of retail theft at Dick's Sporting Goods at about 2:50 p.m. Officers arrived and spoke with the store manager, who described a black male in his 20s entering the store and stealing over $1,000 in clothing from the business. The suspect had stolen multiple Nike brand sweatpants and sweatshirts and left the business without paying for anything. The theft was captured on video surveillance, showing the suspect wearing green pants with white stripes before leaving the store in a black Chrysler van with Texas registration plates. Officers located the vehicle as it drove west on Empire Street near the intersection with Main Street. An officer activated his lights to stop the vehicle. The vehicle then proceeded to turn south on northbound Main Street, disregarding the one-way street signs, and fled at high speed, the prosecutor said. The vehicle swerved around another police vehicle, also with lights and sirens activated, then turned onto Chestnut Street before ending up heading west on Locust Street, again disregarding one-way signs and traveling the wrong way. Officers discontinued their pursuit for the safety of the officers as well as the other drivers on the road, Spitsbergen said. Officers later found the vehicle crashed at the intersection of Lee and Jefferson Street with smoke in the air and numerous people running away from the intersection. The vehicle had run the stop sign at the intersection and crashed into a Hyundai Elantra. The force of the crash pushed the Elantra into the southbound lane, where it was hit a second time by another vehicle. The vehicles were then pushed into two parked cars. The total damage to the vehicles was estimated to be over $300, and the driver of the Elantra was transported by family to a hospital due to pain in her torso area, the prosecutor said. The driver of the van ran from the scene of the crash through an alley near Jefferson Street. He was later found in a yard in a 700 block of West Washington Street, climbing a fence while fleeing from police. The suspect was identified as the defendant, Taryn Garrett, and identified as the individual who had stolen from Dick's Sporting Goods. He did not have a driver's license on him, and he denied driving. The stolen property was found in the crashed van, and store employees determined the total of the 16 stolen items were valued at $1,359. Police then determined the defendant's license had been suspended out of Michigan. Spitsbergen said the defendant admitted to police that he took the clothing from the store. However, Garrett spoke aloud to the court, denying that he ever said this. Spitsbergen continued, noting the defendant had told police he did not have money to pay for the items and that he fled to avoid being arrested. He also admitted to being on probation at the time. In arguing for his release, Assistant Public Defender Stuart Wallace said the defendant has been visiting an uncle who lives locally and requires Garrett's assistance. Wallace asked to be released with court supervision with a no-contact order for Dick's Sporting Goods and an order not to operate a motor vehicle. However, the state had alleged Garrett had threatened great bodily harm through fleeing. It also found him unlikely to comply with conditions of release due to his having a revoked license and his noncompliance with probation terms by committing this offense. Black sided with the defense and ordered the defendant be released with conditions that he have no contact with any Dick's Sporting Goods in McLean County. He was to report to pretrial services and sign an extradition waiver. Garrett is scheduled for arraignment at 9 a.m. on December 5th. Lane reduction planned for Airport Road. A lane reduction went into effect at 7 a.m. today on Airport Road south of Shepherd Road for inlet repairs. Drivers are urged to use caution when traveling through the area. The lane reduction is expected to be completed by 3 p.m. on Friday, weather permitting. For more information, you can contact Chris Scott at 309-454-9768. Normal author to discuss memoir at ARC. Normal resident Melanie Verbout will share her experience of writing a memoir, Go Pick Peas, A Childhood Out of Touch, at the Normal Activity and Recreation Center next week. Starting at 10 a.m. Wednesday, November 19th, Verbout will offer insights on her writing experience and discuss her memoir, which was released in September. Verbout has lived in Normal for more than 50 years, but her childhood was marked by general instability as her family moved from place to place, according to a news release from the ARC. She will discuss and reflect on her experience turning her own story into a book when she visits the ARC, located at 600 East Willow Street. The program will be free for ARC members and open to non-members for $5. Non-members will need to register for a guest pass before attendance, so please arrive early. For more information, you can call 309-888-9099. Underground Railroad, topic for barn keepers. The McLean County Barn Keepers will have an annual open meeting at 7 p.m. Thursday, November 13th at the McLean County Farm Bureau Building, 2242 Westgate Drive in Bloomington. It will feature a tour of local Underground Railroad history by McLean County Museum of History librarian Bill Kemp, the release stated. Copies of the Barnkeeper's book, Centennial Barns of McLean County, will be available and refreshments will be served. Christmas Candlelight Services in Elkhart. The Elkhart Historical Society's 35th Annual Christmas Candlelight Service will be held December 6th and 7th at the St. John the Baptist Chapel atop Elkhart Hill. A new candlelit program of readings, script, and musics set to the theme A Classic Christmas will be at 2, 5:30, and 8 p.m. on Saturday, December 6th, and at 2 on Sunday, December 7th. Tickets for candlelight services are $15 each. 2026 memberships are $20 for seniors and $25 for others. Tickets can be booked online at ElkhartHistoricalSociety.org or by phone at 217-947-2238. Meals prior to or following the services will be available. The Talk of the Town will serve meals on Saturday at an additional cost of $35. The Elkhart Historical Society will take care of making your reservation. Full details will be included on the reservation form. Horse Feathers Wild Hair Cafe will serve lunch prior to the matinee on Sunday. Reservations are required and must be made by calling 219-947-2100. We'll take a short break now and then return with the second half of the Pantograph for November 12, 2025. Please stay tuned.